5,000, 6,000 died from worry and anxiety. There's a sense in which there's some truth to that, isn't there? There's a sense in which worry can kill you. There's a way in which worry causes stress, and stress causes heart issues and other physical infirmities. And someone once said, what we ought to be worried about is worry. And so Jesus addresses the people of his day, and he wants to talk to them about what they worry about. And so in verse 25 of Matthew chapter 6, he says, "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life." Do not worry about your life. Now, he doesn't say don't plan your life. I mean, I don't think he's against planning, and I think I can make a pretty good biblical case that he's for making plans. He doesn't say don't work. And I think sometimes people take don't worry as mean don't work. I mean, he's not saying just sit there, it'll come to you. Don't plan, don't endeavor to achieve those plans. But he says maybe plan, go ahead, work, but don't worry. Now, it's interesting because I think that for us, sometimes we think that we worry more than other generations. And it might be true in America that you and I have more to worry about. And sometimes, again, if I might reference Andy Griffith, sometimes I watch the Andy Griffith Show and say, wouldn't it have been nice to live there? There's no worry. The only thing you have to worry about is getting a jaywalking ticket by Barney Fife. That's the only worry you got in Mayberry. And you look at that and say, well, but we have worries. And look at the stress that we're under. And life is very fast moving. And you have economic issues. And we have a $20 trillion debt that's bound to explode at some point, and we have political turmoil, and we have wars and rumors of wars, and we have wildfires, and we have earthquakes and hurricanes, and we have all of these things. And on top of that, we have, you know, two-income families, and our kids have to not just get through ninth grade and then go get a job, but we got to get them through college, and maybe they'll get a job. And we have all of this stress and worry, and we think, well, maybe we have more than other people. But when Jesus was teaching, they had stress too. I mean, they had their worries. And they had worries comparable to ours because, for the first thing, work did not come easily. And in some ways, it was better to be a slave than a laborer, because if you were a slave, at least you knew you were going to eat. You were somebody's property. You were valuable to somebody, and they were going to feed you. But you live very much day to day, and scholars will say there's two kinds of poor in the Bible. There's those who don't have anything, and there are those who just have it for the day. And if you were rich, you had enough food for tomorrow. Or if you were middle class, you would have enough food for tomorrow. And there's, I think, a lot of truth to that. They lived on the edge. Work, they would go to the town square, and you may or may not have work. They would choose the laborers often from the town square for the day, and you didn't even know if you had a job, if you didn't own any property. You didn't have any government programs. There wasn't any safety net for you. If you didn't work and get it, you didn't have it. There wasn't anybody coming along to give you something. You would work till you got too old to work, or you worked till you die. But if you had to get to a place where you could not work, you better hope you had a lot of kids, because that would be your only safety net. A family member would have to care for you, and so you better hope that they would care for you. It was a very trying place. And you think about being even like a young girl. You didn't get to go out and choose your own husband. And think about the stress and worry you might have as a 12 or 13-year-old, hoping that your parents made the right decision for you. They had their worry. They did have their anxiety. And in some ways, you could argue that it was worse than ours, because, again, they didn't have a safety net even. But for us, we often do have some form of safety net. But even to them, Jesus said, I don't want you to worry. I don't want you to be full of anxiety. And then he gives them at least five reasons why they shouldn't worry. And these five reasons are here spelled out. The first reason that he says is that worry in and of itself is needless. It's needless. Look at verse 25 again. Therefore I say to you, do not worry after your life, what you eat or what you will drink, nor after your body, or nor about your body, what you will put in it. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more valuable than them? So he's working two different reasons there for why it would be needless to worry. The first reason is that God gave you a body. He gave you life. And a body is far more valuable than food or clothing. So if he gave you life, if he gave you a body, you ought to have a high degree, an absolute degree of certainty that he would reasonably give you food and clothing for the body. I mean, if you bought a nice dress in a store, surely they'll give you the hanger. I mean, I just paid for the dress. You got to give me the hanger. The hanger's worth far more less than the dress would be. I mean, if you went and you bought your wife a diamond ring, surely they'll put it in a box for you. I mean, the box is nothing. The ring would be everything. I mean, if you were in a restaurant and they brought out a fine, you know, bottle of Welch's grape juice, surely they'll give you the glass to pour it in. If you bought the juice, give me the glass. And what he's saying is, if God gives you the body, which is far more valuable than the food or the clothes, surely he's going to give you the less if he gave you the infinitely greater. So worry would be needless. He said, look at the birds of the air. You're far more valuable than the birds of the air. And he seems to provide for the birds of the air. They seem to eat. They seem to have what they need to sustain life. And again, you're far more valuable than them. I remember my dad in his backyard. There would be doves that would fly into his backyard. He called them doves. We called them pigeons. I don't know the difference, but they're pigeons or doves. And he would sit out there at a table, and there was one dove or pigeon that sort of befriended him. It would come over and sit on the table, and it got to where it would come and sit on his finger if he held it down. This is a sort of a wild bird, but we were thinking maybe somebody lost the bird, but it began to be very civilized. And Dad started to worry about this bird because it was so tame, and you have, you know, roving cats in the neighborhood and whatever else. He started to think it's too civilized to be safe. It's going to get eaten the way that it's behaving. And so he built it a house, and it was sort of not so extravagant. It was sort of a log house for a dove. He did put a shingle roof on it. And so he put the dove in there, and he left it for a couple of days, and he got to thinking, you know, that dove looks lonely. I got to get it some friends. So he went and he got into the Iwana, and he found somebody who was selling doves, and he went and bought him two friends and to put in the cage. And then he was watching the situation, and he thought, you know what, it's a cage, and they're not being able to experience sunlight because they're there. And so he went out and he got his hammer and saw and nails again, and he built a pretty extravagant porch where they could sun themselves on this bird cage. And he put his hammer and nails away again. And then he got to thinking, you know, I wonder if they get tired of sitting on my artificial rod there. They get to sit on the rod and they seem happy, but they might like to fill the ground in their claws. They might like to have like a stump in there that they're more used to. And so he knocked out the bottom of the cage and built stairs so that they could then get down to the bottom, brought the cage down, and then put a stump in there for them. And he put his hammer and nails up again. And then a few days later, he's watching it, and he says, well, you know, I've made an assumption that they're happy with the situation, but maybe they would like to build their own nest. So he went in there and built boxes that they could put nests in, and then he went and gathered all kinds of stuff to put in the bottom and got it where they could build their own nest. And I was sitting with him in his sunroom one day, and he's watching outside, and he says, you know, that cage is too close to the house. It's too artificial. It needs to be moved over there because it would have a more natural setting for the birds. It was over there under that tree. You know, and of course, I said, I'm going to go to the restroom. I left. I'm going to haul the, no, I'm going to move that cage with him. That's what he was driving at. I'm going to move the cage all the way across the yard. But think about what God does for the bird. I mean, Dad's caring for his pigeon. Yeah? But God is far more love than my father would have for a bird. And he says he cares for the bird. And if God would care for a sparrow, you got to believe that he would care about you. Worry is needless. Then he says not only is worry needless, but worry is useless. Notice verse 27. Which of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? Cubit's 18 inches, I think. It varies, but tends to be about 18 inches. He says, worry doesn't accomplish anything. Worry doesn't make marriages better. Worry won't fix your marriage. Worry won't help your children. Worry doesn't build congregations. We can worry about any number of things, but worry in and of itself doesn't help build congregations. Worry doesn't help your health. Worry won't get you a job. What is it that worry does for you? Doesn't add an inch to your height. He said, worry is useless. Then he says, not only is worry useless, but worry is faithless. It's needless. It's useless. It's faithless. Notice verse 28. So why do you worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you that even Solomon in all of his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is, and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Again, he's saying, look at nature. The lilies of which he speaks were flowers, and they were very beautiful flowers, but they were very fragile flowers, and they would grow among the weeds, but you would look out across the field of weeds, and you would see these flowers blooming, and Jesus says they're absolutely beautiful. They're more beautiful than the clothing of Solomon. He said, but a woman will go out, and to kindle her fire, to get it started, she'll go out and she'll get handfuls of weeds. She'll cut that stuff down and she'll cut out the lilies with it. She's after the weeds. She gets the flowers too. She takes them back. She throws them in her oven. And that's the end of them. They came up in a day. They're burned in the fire by the end of the day. And he said, and yet God cares about them. I mean, he cared enough about them to make them beautiful, is what Jesus is saying. And he says, he'll take care of you. Have faith in that. Trust that. Worry is an act of distrust. If he cares about the birds, if he cares about the body, if he cares about the flowers, have faith that he can handle your stuff and that he will handle your stuff. And he says, not only is it needless or useless or faithless, he starts to hit a little harder. He says it's godless. Notice verse 31. Therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or what shall we wear? For after these things the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knows that you need all of these things. The Gentiles or the pagans could not trust their gods. They believed in a multitude of gods. The Romans and the Greeks believed in hundreds of gods, and the gods were always fighting. And if you read the mythology, you know about some of those gods. The gods could be petty. They would argue with each other. Sometimes they would neglect. Sometimes they would try to kill people. The gods couldn't be trusted. So even as you prayed to the gods, even as you reached out, the gods had the power, according to the Romans and the Greeks, to help you. They couldn't trust them. And so they would have to do things themselves. The gods might get mad. The gods, again, might neglect them. The gods were, in many ways, human. And so they were prone to worry even after they prayed, even after they asked the gods. They had no confidence the gods would do anything about them because the gods could be evil and petty. And he says, when you pray, when you bring it to the Father, and then you continue to worry about it, you're treating me like the Greeks and the Romans treat their gods, and the reason they worry is because they doubt the character of their gods. So when you worry, you're doubting my character. You're treating me like one of those other gods. And he says it's a godless thing to do that. Then fifthly, he says it's needless, it's useless. It's faithless, it's godless. This fifthly, it's just impractical. Notice verse 34. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Sort of some comedy there, isn't it? Like Jesus says, don't worry. God cares, He sees, He understands. Needless, useless, I'm stumbling on that word, faithless, godless, but you're going to worry anyway, aren't you? I've told you all that, you're going to worry, it's in your system, so at least do this. When you worry, worry about today, not tomorrow, because tomorrow's got its own troubles. At least break it down into small parts. Worry about things that might happen today, but you know you shouldn't worry because tomorrow will take care of itself. Why are you thinking about tomorrow? For heaven's sake, don't worry about tomorrow. It's not practical to do that. Got enough problems for today. If you're going to worry about that stuff. Abraham Lincoln told a story, and I've thought about the story a lot. It's a very simple story, but Lincoln was a lawyer, and he was on the frontier, so the judge and the lawyers would travel together from town to town, and they were sort of a traveling party. They would go to a town, and then they would set up a court, and the judge would be there, and then they would get clients to sit in that traveling courtroom. And Lincoln was asked when he became president by Horace Greeley. He was traveling to Washington, and he stopped in New York. And Horace Greeley asked him what he was going to do about the war that seemed to be brewing, how he was going to handle what seemed to be an inevitable war. And Lincoln told a story based on those days as a traveling lawyer. He said that they were traveling in the outback, sort of out in the wilderness, and they'd cross a lot of rivers, but there was one river yet to cross, the Fox River. And they never crossed it before, and it was a pretty treacherous river. So they were sitting in a tavern, relaxing, and there was a traveling evangelist who went around preaching in other churches who had crossed the Fox River. And they asked the traveling evangelist, what's the way that you cross the Fox River? And the guy said, well, I got one rule about crossing the Fox River. I never cross the Fox River till I get to the Fox River. And what he was saying is, I don't worry about it till I get there. It's his own problem. I'll face that problem when I get there, but I don't spend my days worrying about what's going to happen. I'll cross the bridge when I get to it. And that was the answer that Lincoln said. He said, I don't essentially have the answer to how I'm going to handle the war that could be coming, but I'll handle it when I get to it. There's a sense in which Jesus is saying that. He's saying, don't worry about the stuff out in the future. Don't think about that. If you want to worry, if you have to worry, worry about the stuff for today. The future has its own problems. Worry about the stuff that's in front of you. Question is, how do you do that? How do you do that? And it seems to me that what Jesus is getting at is that the answer to not worrying, and by the way, I'm preaching to myself here, because if I have one besetting sin, it's worry. If I have one besetting sin, it's in this area. But it seems to me what Jesus is saying here is that the answer is you have to fix your focus away from this world. Because he begins the passage in verse 25 again by saying, therefore. So that links it to what he just said. And what has he just said, by the way? He's been talking about don't lay up for yourself treasures on earth because moths and rust will decay. If you focus on laying up treasure, the moths will get it, the rust will get it, the thieves will get it. And he says, so don't focus on laying stuff up for yourself. And so he's talking about people who are focused on this world. And they want to get ahead. They worry about money, and they want to achieve in this life. And so, yeah, when the stock market changes, it's a problem for them. If there are losses, it's a problem for them. If things are happening in the country, it's a problem for them because they're focused on building. They're focused on building a financial empire, at least in this case. They're focused on doing something that is credible in this life. And it seems to me that then what he says in verse 25 to 34 is instead of being focused on that stuff, don't worry. And I think then what he's saying is, if you focus on that stuff, you will worry. I mean, if you're focused on making $1 million and having $1 million before you're 50, you got a lot of worry in life. Because every time the stock market does something, you're gonna have to worry about it. Every time there's a move in the real estate market, that's a concern for you. I mean, if you are focused on gaining and achieving in this world, if you are focused on making a name for yourself, if you're focused on winning a popularity contest, if that's what you're focused on, if you're focused on this stuff, then you got to worry about the moth and the rust and the thieves. You got to worry about all the stuff that can take it from you. But he said, if you turn your attention from that stuff, then therefore, instead of doing that, therefore, quit worrying. But you got to turn your mind from that stuff. And it's true. It is about focus. If you're looking at the stuff that you want, that you need to achieve, you know, worry is a funny thing. You worry that you're not going to get it. And then when you get it, you worry whether or not you can keep it. I don't know which is worse, worrying that it's not going to happen or worrying that once you've got it, you can keep it. But if that's what you're focused on, you're going to have lots of worry. But if you focus again on what Jesus is saying, he's saying, listen, look at what God does. Quit thinking about achieving. Quit thinking about building storehouses of stuff. Quit thinking about building a great business. Quit thinking about that. Focus on this. God gave you life. Gave you life. He'll give you food and clothing. And if you got food and clothing, be content with that. Focus on the fact that He clothes the fields with flowers. He cares about all that. Focus on that. Focus on His faithfulness. He's not like the other gods. He can be trusted. He'll keep His word. He is able and He is trustworthy. Focus on that. Focus on His faithfulness. And if you'll focus on Him, instead of focusing on this stuff which moth and rust and thieves can take from you, you can deal with the worry in your life. It becomes manageable. I don't know that it's not always there. I think Jesus, again, is the last point. He's coming back and saying, yeah, you're going to worry though, aren't you? You are. And so I think there's a human nature there to worry. But even at that, it shouldn't control your life. It shouldn't control your life. It shouldn't control my life. He says, fix your focus on what God is doing and has done. Fix your focus on His faithfulness away from these things, and you can begin to get worry under control in your life. Amen. Will you stand with me?